This episode is sponsored by Indeed Prime. Indeed Prime helps software developers simplify their job search and land their dream job. Candidates get immediate exposure to the best tech companies with just one simple application to Indeed Prime. Companies on Prime's exclusive platform message candidates with salary and equity upfront. The average software developer gets 5 employer contacts and an average salary of $125,000. Indeed Prime is 100% free for candidates, no strings attached. And when you're hired, Indeed Prime gives you a $2,000 bonus to say thanks for using Prime. But if you use the Bootstrapped Web podcast link, you'll get a $5,000 bonus instead. So sign up now over at Indeed.com/bootstrap.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrap Web. This is the Slovenian, still have a bit of a cold, deep voice edition. And we've we've got our good buddy Justin McGill from LeadFuse on with us. And fellas, it's good to be back.
Yeah, good to be back. Justin, good to have you on. And you guys, obviously, you may know Justin from the Zero to Scale podcast, and he's been running LeadFuse. I think, Justin, you've been on this podcast sometime in the past, right?
This is my first time with Jordan here, though.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes me feel special now.
Yeah, very cool. Well, you know, as we were talking before the show, I'm sure a lot of our audience kind of overlaps with Zero to Scale. If you don't, then you probably should. It's a really good podcast with Justin and Greg Hickman. You know, I thought today we'll just do our typical updates episode, and we'll include Justin in that as well. But you know, Jordan, why don't we start off with you? You talked a little bit about traveling last week, but where are you at, and what's the general update on your end?
Yeah, so it's been a very interesting few weeks. I'd say about a month ago, I was at, I don't know, it's not a low point, but at a high stress point. I was stressed. We had been working on the new funnel product for a while. It still wasn't quite where I wanted it to be, where I felt comfortable pushing on the marketing. And if I go too long without trying to sell something to a stranger, I just get awkward and uncomfortable. So it had just been too long, and it started to get to the point where I was like, so where is this going to happen? is it going to be another week, or is it going to be another 4 weeks? Because for my stress management, I need to know. And the truth is, you know, sometimes we talk about straight business, and in this case, there was a lot of personal and business overlap. So I experienced like a family hardship. You know, I don't want to get too personal about it, but we had a pretty traumatic event happen in the personal life, and that kind of veered me off course for a while. And then that definitely had a very big impact in like bringing that stress into the business. So it's just a lot to kind of manage and handle. So that was a few weeks ago.
And not to mention, you know, again, not to go too much on the personal side, but that also caused you to travel like across the country too.
It caused a whole bunch of travel and a whole bunch of disruption, and you know, it just, you know, and then family comes first. But as a business owner, you don't get to be like, dear boss, I'll see you in 2 weeks. You just don't get to do that. You can't do it. And then you have to manage that with the family and expectations. So it was a lot to deal with. That was a few weeks ago, and then right around the same time, Ben, my co-founder and CTO, had a planned trip to go to Slovenia, where our dev team is, right? Our lead developer, Rock, I'm sitting on the balcony of his apartment right now in Ljubljana, and we just hired a second full-time developer in Jan. Ben was going to come out here for 3 weeks with them and just kind of get our process straight, right? I think I've said the word process 500 times over the past 2 weeks because it's just been a really big focus. So he came out here, and I was in my stress hole. And at some point, my wife, God bless her, basically said to me, look, dude, go there. Just freaking go there. You know, I'll be fine.
Get away from me.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't want to hear about it anymore. Get the hell out of here.
Right. You don't actually help very much. And so she basically said, she gave me like the green light. You know, she gave me like the idea and the green light. And I thought that was the right move. So
what
I've been
a trooper.
In,
I mean, you've got kids, sure. Little ones. I mean, that's, you know, that's a handful. And for her to, you know, even recommend that is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so supportive.
Kind of, that's so, it makes so you important. Feel good. Having a supportive spouse, it makes things about 100 times easier than a non-supportive spouse. Yeah. So I've been in Slovenia, in Ljubljana, for about a week. The truth is, we were only here for 2 days, and then we got an Airbnb in Croatia on the coast to basically just hole up in a hacker house for like 5 days and just do nothing but work. We managed to get to the ocean here and there and eat some calamari, but we basically just lived together and worked all day. And now at the end of this week, it's Friday now, I'm like in a completely different place. Just optimistic, huge progress, fun. The team cohesion is back where we want it to be. So sometimes, you know, we have remote businesses, but sometimes being in person, so it's a big deal.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I know we're knee deep in office negotiations right now just to house everybody under one roof. So it's interesting because, so you just brought on a new developer that's also there?
He's Slovenian, and that was our goal, was to make sure that Rock and Jan could be together in the same office working next to each other. We thought to go from one developer to two is going to be hard enough. To add in the geography issue was just going to be too disruptive.
I'm curious about like what where are you at exactly on the product now, and like what actually changed, what shipped this week after you guys worked together?
Yeah, it was interesting to kind of a lot of the work was prioritizing. The first thing we had to do was, okay, we have too many things to do. We can't just leave them hanging out there like, oh, this all has to get done, because it's not all in the same level of priority. One thing needs to get done, and then the next thing, and then so figuring that out was our first task. So our first day was, okay, we have these hairy projects, and then we have a million tasks. So let's take these tasks and lump them into these projects. And then look from a business strategy point of view, which projects are most important. And then once you identify those, you know which tasks to do, because those tasks contribute to that project being successfully finished. Right? That way, the individual tasks are serving the larger business strategic goal. That was like the first day there, was laying that down. Okay, what do we need to do first?
What do you use to manage that? Like, are you using like GitHub and some other tools for managing that? Because like we're just working this out now with the new developer on the SaaS, and we're using ZenHub with GitHub.
We were using Sprintly, and then that no longer made sense for us. So they use GitHub, and they have a whole GitHub process that I'm just not involved in. But for task management, we do everything in Trello. And it's split up between two boards. It's split up between planning and current sprint. And then you look at the current sprint Trello board, and it is like currently this sprint, and then there's a backlog, and then there's bugs. And then we have different colors for like do this right away or don't do this right away. And then, you know, it kind of extends out from there. And then, so what we do is, well, basically half the challenge is making sure that I don't fuck up our sprints.
Right, I would actually recommend,
like, this isn't a big deal, right?
I would recommend ZenHub. I know Brian just mentioned it. I know that's what we're doing. You know, it sits inside of GitHub, and it's basically like Trello.
It is basically Trello inside GitHub.
It's fully integrated. And so, you know, I mean, you can even make a commit, and then that automatically will close out that issue inside of GitHub. You know, it's just,
yeah, that's what I like about it. Is having ZenHub is the GitHub issues. Whereas if you have like Trello or like Asana or something else, you got to constantly like keep them in sync, or you know, copy progress and stuff. It's not fun.
All in one place. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. I would recommend Ben take a look at that.
I pinged it to them, and then I let them do, look, it's their life. It's organizing their life. The truth is, once they got organized in a certain way, I now have marketing mirror it. So my marketing Trello board is very, very similar to theirs. So they can quickly look and say, what's Jordan doing? What's next week? What's a backlog? Where's my inbox? All these. So that's
my other question for you is, all right, so the product is moving along. Sounds good. What's going on the marketing side? And like, what have you been doing up until now with the new product, and what's changed going forward?
Okay, so one of the more interesting things over the past few weeks is like this, what's the dynamic between marketing and product? So at some point, product was like lagging behind and stagnating a little bit. It wasn't stagnating, it was just slow, because it's just a big hairy product. And so that was torturing marketing. Marketing had nothing to do. You're like, what do we do now? What, get this done so I can move. So that was like a very negative dynamic. And then the progress this week on the product, it like energized the marketing side. It's like, oh my God, now I feel more confident in being able to push this. Because the big thing is we were having performance issues, man. We were having speed. Like, this is a checkout page. You can't be slow. And we're serving big file sizes because we're using JSON to make everything super flexible instead of HTML. So it's just like complicated. And one of the biggest things we tackled this week was we have to destroy that performance issue. And we spent 24 hours straight on it and improved it by like 95%. So that's like a product issue. And then that immediately lights a fire under the marketing side's ass. Like, oh my God, now I feel better about this. And now I can start running ads. And now I start. So the dynamic has been super interesting. And then right back, as soon as I got the confidence to say, okay, let me send out an email to our email list introducing this new product. And I wrote a blog post about it. All of a sudden, all this energy comes in for marketing. We've got new trials. We've got people asking questions on intercom. And all of a sudden, the tech guys are like, oh, this is awesome. So now they get energized by that. So it's like this interplay between the two where one can't lag behind the other, right? It's like two people running makes each other run faster as opposed to the other way around.
Neither side of it can run away, right? Like, so even though LeadFuse, so we just surpassed 30K MRR, we're still in that dynamic, right? Like, we got to a point where, okay, now we have a couple of big bugs that are causing some major issues, and we're trying to go through, you know, this whole like hiring process with developers and everything right now. But what it does, and you touched on it, is it doesn't give you the confidence. Like, you're missing that, right? And so you're kind of like, well, let's not publish this piece, or let's not go full on with sales just yet. You know, we got to get the product back right. And then that happens, and yeah, like you said, and then, you know, eventually all these new customers and all these new intercom tickets, that turns into more problems, right, that you didn't even realize you had. And so now you're like, okay, hold on a second, let's go back. Uh-huh. You know, uh-huh. Yeah, it just goes back and forth, man.
Yeah, you look forward to the ideal, but you never get to a point where, okay, product is perfect, let me just run with marketing. Right. So there is a point in time where you have to say, screw it, I'm just going to start marketing. So what we did internally was like, Jordan, tell us your list of things that when they're done, you have no more excuses to market.
Nice.
And then, you know, so like, look, there are issues that aren't as important. So once we got those done, I was like, cool, I got no more excuses, I'm running.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, what are you doing on the onboarding front for the new checkout product? Like, is there a lot of like manual kind of one-to-one onboarding involved at this point?
Yeah. So you asked basically what we're doing on the marketing side, right? So up until now, it's been like ground game. It's just people who come in. For a really long time, we had nothing on the marketing side about the new product. We had a page for it. We had a graphic showing a funnel. And then we had sign up underneath. So we had people signing up just from that. So that's clearly people who are looking at it being like, huh, that looks interesting enough for me to sign up with my credit card in without knowing anything else. So those people we latched onto. We were like, yo, what are you trying to do? Let's get on Skype. So we probably had like 20-ish signups like that. So I have like good relationships with like 6 to 8 people like that. So that's what helped us identify these issues. You're like, oh, I need a custom subdomain, and oh, I have this stuff. And so it just like forced us to iron out these bugs because it was a real person saying, hey, I want to use this. So we just launched a new website last week. That was like a big kicker in the energy for everyone.
Beautiful and that, one, by the way.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
I'm really, really, really like proud of it. It was hard.
so now, like going forward, like what's in place if somebody comes to the site and signs up?
So the way we're looking at it is like, if there's like a row of dominoes or a row of hurdles, let's say there are 5 hurdles between someone signing up and someone becoming a paying customer. We are trying to make each hurdle fall in the right order. So the marketing site was the first hurdle. Now onboarding is like the second hurdle. So that's what we're working on now. Then we have like performance issues are like the next hurdle because that assumes someone is using it and driving people. And then it's like little features that make it better are like further hurdles.
Like retention.
Right. Retention is like late.
Right.
So we're trying to go in the right order.
I like it.
So marketing site done, and now promotion is going to start to happen, and now onboarding, we just are looking at our UX like, okay, it's improved a lot, but it's difficult. So what we have is we have a very – Ben probably spent a week on UX wireframes, and what came out was really good. So we have an unbelievably simple onboarding process that, right, we always try to do three steps. So it's connect to your Shopify store, build your first funnel, connect the payment processor. And it's really, you can get through it in less than 10 minutes and have your first funnel built.
Do you provide like an example funnel in there?
That is right now a list in my Trello. Yeah. Stuff to create that will help. And it's just like a list of 25 things. Yep. But right now it's kind of like you're a little bit in the dark. You know what you're supposed to do, but you don't have any examples. So that's like next.
Yep. Yeah, that helps, right, with new users. I know we're looking at, you know, building out like an example sequence, you know, for people. I mean, we've provided some templates, but, you know, just having an actual sequence in place, I think would help people kind of understand, okay, this is how long I should wait. This is what it, you know, the email should look like. These are some subject lines, you know, it just gives people a good idea on just how to get started. I mean, that's typically a roadblock is, you know, okay, well, now I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I totally agree. If we look at someone that's adjacent to us, a competitor-ish, is ClickFunnels. When you create an account, they include six funnels in your account.
Yeah.
The webinar funnel, the consulting funnel, this funnel. It's just you're on your way.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking along the same lines for this Audience Ops calendar product, because like I talked a few weeks earlier about how I'm designing it starting with the onboarding, and but now that I've redesigned it a couple times and talked to more customers, I'm realizing that the onboarding screens are probably going to be held off until later. And now we're building the MVP. So let's just get the core product built, and I will tackle onboarding a little bit later. But
your onboarding is going to be, so you have your MVP. And so if you built your onboarding around your MVP, well, now when you start to add new features, your whole onboarding is outdated. You know,
yeah,
it's tough to keep it up.
Part of it is, through talking to people and redesigning some of the features a little bit, I'm trying to figure out first what are the most important features to build, and then that'll also dictate the onboarding. But one thing, like no matter how we work it out with the onboarding UX, we will have built in templates. Like a big part of it is building like a standard checklist template for how you produce a blog article. And we could just have users, you know, create your own template from day one, or we can just give them our template to start with. And it's all optimized based on literally what we've been using in Audience Ops. And then they can just tweak that or create a new one if they want. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
That's the plan. Good stuff. So, any other updates there, Mr. Gal?
No, I'll give another update. You know, basically we're launching Facebook ads on Monday and starting to make a push into the Facebook groups, which is a lot of where the energy around this type of product is. And then we're releasing, our distribution strategy to start off is basically similar to the recovery product where we do integrations. In this situation, we don't do any integrations, but it's not a technical integration. Our product requires a landing page that we don't offer. So you need to use another landing page platform. So in order to encourage use, instead of just saying, go create a landing page, we are giving away landing page templates. But we're not just giving away templates. We are building the template in ClickFunnels and lead pages and then sharing it with other users. So it's already in their editor. It's like as close to them being able to just swap it out and use our product as possible. Yep. Yeah. So that's it. How about you, Brian? Talk to us. What's new? You got your life is splitting in half too. You're two timing it these days.
I guess my updates are now, and really my whole life during the week is like split between the service side of Audience Ops are done for you, and the software side, which is, you know, the new SaaS product that we're just getting off the ground. On the service side, I did dip back into that a little bit in the past week, and a couple of updates there. I mean, first, I don't usually talk too many numbers on this podcast or anything, but I thought, you know, this week we hit a pretty good milestone. So we passed 50K MRR in the done for you service side of Audience Ops this week. And, you know, I'm happy to see that right now because it's September and that was actually the goal for 2016. And we hit that, you know, a few months early.
That was awesome, man.
And
Congratulations.
Thank you. Of course, the very next day we had one cancellation, which brought us back to 49.5. But, you know, so.
Ain't that a microcosm?
I know. It's always happens that way. But that's pretty good because we did start to slow down about 3 or 4 months ago. We had a bit of a churn issue and just a slowdown in leads. Maybe it was like the summertime. I don't know if that impacted it at all, but it definitely picked up in the last 2 or 3 months, and both leads and churn reduced a lot. And I think that's due to a bunch of changes in our onboarding for the service that I put in place about 3 months ago. So that's good. Another thing that's happening this week is we're hiring another writer, and this is like the 20th or so writer that we've hired since the beginning. You know, hiring in general is one of those things that just takes up so much of my time, like just sifting through applications and then holding interviews and then having a short list and then getting them on board. So for the writing position, since we've hired for this so many different times and we really have figured out now that, all right, this is exactly who works out well in the long term at Audience Ops. That was like the first hiring role that I can now delegate. So we have a team manager, Kat, on the team, and she's been with us for over a year now. And so now I basically delegated this entire process to her. So she's the one reviewing our incoming candidates. She's holding first interviews. She's making a short list. And then basically by the end of probably next week, I'll have a list of about three top candidates that I'll review, and maybe I'll do like a final interview with one or two of them and then bring them on board. So that's nice because that's like a key part of the team that just continues to grow, and that's like a 2-week process that I don't really need to handle anymore.
I'm forever impressed by your ability to just back out of your business, just slowly creep out of it. I just keep one going further in,
one piece at a time. You know, especially now that I'm trying to focus almost all my time on the software side, I'm really honing in on like the final few pieces of the service that really eat up a lot of my time. And the other piece of that are sales calls. And I mean, I talked earlier this year about bringing on a salesperson, and that was working fairly well for a couple months. But I eventually backed off of that, and I took sales back over myself. It just made more sense that way. And I optimized the sales process to a point where we have this live demo, like a slide presentation that I show every lead. And that has definitely helped conversions, and it also helps set the right expectations as people join the service. But now that I've done it, like, I don't know, in the last 2 months, like 50 or 60 of these calls, I'm doing the same presentation over and over and over again. And, you know, a bunch of these a week, not only is it time consuming, but I'm like having like nightmares over this like slide presentation. Just like the script is like drilled into my head at this point.
But that makes it repeatable, which makes it something that you can train somebody else to do, you know? So that's
definitely helpful. What I'm doing, I'm
record a few of them that you're doing.
Well, and so that's
training materials.
Well, that's what I'm doing. Actually, the sales guy was doing this sales presentation, but for now, you know, I'm still kind of like the sole salesperson, and that's working out fine. But what I'm doing today into next week is I made a recorded version of the sales demo, and now that I've done it so many times, it's like I refined it, it's optimized. Made a recorded version, so now when somebody, well, this will be in place next week, when somebody fills out the consultation form on our homepage, the very next page is going to be just showing the sales demo, you know, the video. And then they can just watch the demo there. It's like 10 or 12 minutes. Below that, there'll be basically two buttons. One is, you know, you could sign up right now, which I don't know how many people will actually sign up without talking to someone. The other option is to just directly to my Calendly schedule a consultation. You know, I still expect to do high touch, you know, one-to-one sales to bring people on, but at least once they get on the call with me, they'll most likely have already seen the sales demo and have most of their questions answered. So it should make those calls a little bit faster and easier. And the other thing that I want to put in place with that is some better like automated email sequences. Like right now we have nothing. After somebody requests a consultation, they just get manual follow-ups from me.
Like indoctrination ahead of the conversation.
Yeah, it's something that I've just been meaning to do for months, and it's been on the back burner. So lately, we've developed a number of these like case study pieces on our Audience Apps blog, with like highlighting like five or six of our clients, and they're actually like long stories. Actually, Jordan, you're one of them. And so I want to line those up in like an email sequence. So after you see the demo and request a consultation, for the next like 2 weeks or so, you'll get, you know, emails with like, check out these case studies and check out these like lesser known benefits of audience apps and all this kind of stuff.
You know, what also might be interesting is putting together kind of a monthly newsletter of sorts for your list, and actually highlighting some of the content that your team wrote that month. You know, it's like,
we do that every week. We do the audience app service for ourselves too. Like
I actually just mean for the content that your team has created for your customers, testimonial almost of, you know, look at all of our great customers and all the content we do, you know,
because that's the big concern, right? Is the content going to be up to my standards? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be okay outsourcing this?
We have a samples. We have a PDF that contains like 8 or 9 articles that we've done for other clients.
I don't think that's as good as links.
That's your hand picked. These are the best examples. You know, this, what I was talking about was just, I mean, this is what we do, right? This is this month's content, you know? Just an idea.
I do like that idea. I'll probably have to, you know, ask for permission, because not all clients would want to have their stuff promoted in that way, but,
you can't have any of my shit.
All right. Well,
scratch them off the list. No, that's awesome.
But though, yeah, that's basically the update on the service side of it. I've got a couple updates on the software side, but I don't know. I mean, should we bounce over to someone else first?
Justin's been waiting patiently.
Yeah.
What's up with you? Like, for those who, I think a lot of people, you know about LeadFuse, maybe have followed you on the podcast. So like, what's new right now as we get into like, you know, end of 2016?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I'm kind of going through. It's certainly a stressful time period with LeadFuse, because, you know, we basically lost our CTO in August, and we've tried to patchwork a development team together, but they're all part-time. Like, this is nobody's full-time thing. Wow. And when that happens, you're just not the priority, right? So, you know, kind of been dealing with this for the past few weeks, and, you know, just coming to this realization that I have to find someone that can just dominate and take over the product, make it theirs, and run with it. And they need to be local, because we're going to be opening an office space at, you know, the beginning of the year. And so business partner Damian Thompson, he's actually moving out here at the beginning of the year, you know, uprooting his family and coming out here. And so
we got to get an update with both you guys on the show and hear about that whole story.
It's going well, but you know, we're talking about earlier the confidence factor too, right? Knowing that we have a couple of these major bugs that are, you know, sort of preventing us from delivering on our promise, right? You know, in particular, like we automatically detect replies and we take them out of, you know, those leads out of follow-ups, and that's not happening to a level that it needs to right now. And so we're actually at a point where we're about to fix that. But you know, to tell your users, oh well, you know, you're gonna have to manually at the end of the day go in and change the status, it sucks, right? Like, that's not a good thing when you're talking, your whole value prop is on automated lead gen, but you have to do all of these things manually because, you know, we're not holding up our end of the bargain. And so, you know, it's been a stressful, you know, month or so, but you know, I think we're kind of coming out of that now, which feels good. But you know, it doesn't give you that confidence to go out and you know, market the shit out of it, right? And build your sales team around it. You know, so we're in the process of not only, you know, fixing some things, but we have a major update coming towards, you know, the end of this year, beginning of next year, that's really going to transform the whole product. And so we're also kind of timing that up with the office, and then we're also timing that up with trying to recruit and build the sales team, right? So all of that'll be kind of more at the beginning of the year.
I'm curious about the office. I mean, you know, what led to the decision to build this as an in-house team in one place? Like, did you consider or go back and forth with Damian or anyone else on your team about like, what if we just built this as a remote team?
So we've been fully remote up to this point. So I have an agency background. I mean, I built up and scaled out an agency prior to this, and we were fully in office. And I was attracted to the idea of working remote. And so I was spending more and more time actually working from home, which I'm very productive in that environment. However, you know, the agency, I stepped away a couple of years ago, stepped down. And the agency has slowly started to just kind of wither away almost to a certain degree. You know, key people have left and, you know, it's key customers have left, you know, because there's not that, they made the decision to go remote. I actually made that decision before I had left, and you lose the camaraderie, right? You lose the culture. But I felt like with LeadFuse, if I started it as a remote environment, that, you know, things would be different. When our CTO left, our customer success manager felt a little overwhelmed, and we had this big AppSumo deal go live, and so we were getting pounded. Well, so she was stressed out. She decided to leave. And so part of this was, you know, if we were all together, you would feel like you had someone to talk to as you were going through this. And I just don't think there's that full commitment to the business. And this is just my, you know, my belief. This is not necessarily the way I view remote. I think remote can work. But having said that, I don't think it can work when you're trying to build a sales team and having your salespeople working from home. It's just, it's bad news. And salespeople like to talk. They're not, you know, they don't do well in isolation, right? So just from a personality standpoint too, let alone from a performance standpoint. So we knew without a doubt we were going to be opening up an office, but original thought was we were going to do it just for the sales team. And so as all of this started to happen, I was like, you know what? I mean, we have big aspirations here with this, you know, with LeadFuse and where we want it to go. And I just feel like for us to get there, we need everybody together. And so,
you luckily, know, it is interesting about what you said about when these like stress points happen in the business. If you're in the same room, you kind of feel it together. You could deal with it together. And that's, you know, AudienceOps is fully remote. Over 20 people across the U.S. and in other continents and everything, but. One thing, and I think it works well for us, except I definitely see how that's a pitfall. And it happened like just yesterday, I was on a call with our managers, which I do every 2 weeks. And on these calls, I basically just get updates on what's happening and all the little fires that are going on. That's one thing, being remote. There's a lot that I just don't see. And even other team members don't necessarily see that one writer is particularly overloaded with work or one assistant is just really stressed out and something's going on with this client and it's everything can be a little bit in its own silos, and we're trying to build systems within Slack and having certain team member meetings to keep everybody on the same page. But yeah, that's definitely a challenge.
And you miss the camaraderie, right? Like I know at my agency, we had this whole like office currency called units, and basically you were allowed to wager units against somebody else. I mean, it could just be any stupid little bet. It could be, you know, over a foosball game. It could be, you know, whose, you know, receipt had the lowest dollar value, you know, whatever, right? Like, and so you would make a wager with someone else in the office. And then once you reached a certain number, you could cash those in for the other person to do something embarrassing, right? So we had a guy literally in an Ernie mask. And he had to walk around, you know, street corners and down the sidewalk with a sign that was like, honk if you're horny. And, you know, had to get like five people to honk their horn. And you had to keep doing it until you got those people, right? And so these little things just build relationships that I feel is sorely lacking in a remote environment. And you can do everything you can to try and make it happen. And you know, Jordan's doing it now. Look, Jordan's building, you know, his team in Slovenia. And he's there now, right? Like, why? Because it helps build the team, build the culture. And without those things, I think, you know, you just don't have that. And therefore, you know, it's not as fun. You know, the people aren't, in my opinion, as committed. you know, they're worried about themselves, you know, and working from home, and it's, and they're not necessarily looking at it from the business's perspective and, you know, feeling like they're a part of, you know, truly a part of a team. You know, it's one thing to, you know, be able to communicate through Slack, but, you know, there's something to be said, I think, for in-person relationships. And so, you know, I've kind of done a 180 and went from, you know, oh man, remote's the dream to, you know what? It's not necessarily all it's cracked up to be. And I think for us to go where we want to go, you know, the office is going to play an important role.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like weird having that, those same thoughts. Like, am I just old school? Am I wrong on it? Am I not looking at it the right way? Am I just being a bitch about it? You know, whatever it is, but it's just the truth.
Well, you look at our community too, right? Like,
for us.
Yeah, our community is a lot of people that want to work remote. They want to travel. They want to, you know, kind of have that, like, maybe lifestyle type business. And not that that's a, you know, a bad thing at all. But, you know, it's so I guess those feelings are a little contrarian to, I think, what we're supposed to think. And so I actually have this whole article on this coming out. I'm not sure yet where, but it's basically, you know, diving into this. It'll probably be like Inc. or Forbes or something is where I'm trying to get that placed. So, yeah, it's a little contrarian, you know, for this audience, at least, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been remote, and I also enjoyed being in like an in-person office environment. I really enjoyed the office I used to work at years ago, but I mean, for me, it a lot of it just comes down to simple finances. You know, when you're bootstrapping and self-funded and you're hiring a lot of part-time people, it just, you know, it I mean, just finding talent is so hard, and to limit it to just my zip code is like, I don't really even see how that would have worked, and especially like where we live, you know, it's not the cheapest part of the country, and it's culture definitely suffers to a certain extent. You know, we do a lot of, we try to do things on Slack where like we're sharing pictures of where we live and what we're doing and things like that. But yeah, it's definitely not the same.
Cool. Yeah, it helps too. You know, we raised a little money here recently. So that certainly helps you kind of get over the hump and make that more of a reality for sure. We won't be raising more. It'll just kind of a, you know, a seed round, and that's it essentially.
Part of it for me though is it's a little bit selfish too, because I want to be working from home, and I want to have a completely flexible schedule as well. And not that I wouldn't if we didn't have an office, but I would probably feel more of an obligation to show up every day and be there in the morning and show the team that hey, I'm here too. Whereas now I am working full time, more than full time.
You don't get the nagging feeling working from home that if you got up every morning and went to an office, that you would be more productive and be more successful?
Oh, I definitely would be more productive. I had an office in Norwalk, you know, before we moved to this house. I mean, we looked for a house that specifically we could make an office, which I did. But
so is it a conscious trade-off?
It's definitely, there's definitely a challenge for me at home, for sure, right now. I mean, we've got two little kids running around, and we've got pretty thin glass doors in my office, and it's you know, it gets loud, I don't have, like my wife put it the other day, that I don't have that decompression time that I used to have when I drove home from the office. Mm-hmm. Now it's like literally I open the door after dealing with a stressful email, and now I'm home, and I need to have like a 20 minutes to go have a beer before I, you know, get into, you know, home life. And that's definitely a challenge. And, you know, my wife has been like super supportive about, what I do and our situation where I work from home. And, they know that, like, you know, during the hours of typically around 8:30 and around 4:30 PM, like I'm basically working, and that's kind of the priority. But, yeah.
There is something to be said about that decompressing too. You know, I know for me, I'll get up, you know, I go into the next room, and my wife's like, all right, here's the baby. You know,
yeah, it's
like,
exactly. Holy shit.
Give me a couple minutes, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a good time to like listen to music or podcast and just kind of, you know, think about the day. So, you know, I think that's also something you can do even working remote too, right? Like you can go for a walk at the end of the day or, you know, something like that, just to kind of decompress a little bit. But Yeah, there's, you know, listen, there's, I'm not, you know, saying the office is, you know, all pros, right? There's definitely cons to it. You know, it can be a distraction, you know, especially when you're, you know, the founder, right? People, hey, got a minute, you know, these, hey, got a minute meetings all the time. You know, there's knocks on the door. You hear things and you're just like,
I even tell my team on Slack almost every day, like, cause they, they'll shoot quick questions to me over Slack. Like, hey, what do I do about this? I got to do this thing. What's happening with that? And I'm always like, just send it to me an email. Email to me so that I can like deal with it tomorrow. You know?
Yeah. on your time. Cause the Slack too is, it's a interesting point. Cause I ask that periodically, I'll ask them to email it to me because to me, sometimes it's the Slack of, if I see a little red number there that there's a task for me to do. Right. And it's like, if I go into that and I'm not able to accomplish it right then and there, I'll forget about it. You know, like I don't want to be storing these things in my head. And so, yeah, like if I go there and then they ask me something to, you know, for me to do, it's like, okay, well, yeah, shoot me an email because I'll forget it. Or I'll send myself an email just saying check, you know, so-and-so Slack message, you know, just to remind myself.
But, yeah. And more times than not, I'm like out. I'm like with the family, right, or I'm not at home and I'm getting Slack on mobile and I'm always just like, just email to me. I literally, I'm not able to deal with it here. So, right. Yeah, it's tricky.
You know, I don't know. We'll see how it goes, I guess. You know, it's tough when, you know, it's tough too. So it was tough for in office to then go full remote. But now it'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of remote going into an office, you know, luckily, or unluckily, we've kind of thinned out the team pretty dramatically. And so, it's, you know, right now going to be Damien and I, and then hopefully, you know, a developer by then as well. But, you know, and then obviously going forward, everyone will just be, you know, they'll have had office experience. It's not like they're coming from a remote environment. So we'll see how it goes. I think it'll be, you know, fairly smooth though.
Yeah, very cool.
I think it'll be good for you.
I'm excited to hear, you know, updates from you guys going forward. It sounds like you're at a pretty big turning point. So it's cool. You know, just to round out some of the updates, we were talking earlier about developers. I think all three of us are involved in hiring developers at one stage or another. And I'm on the software side of things at Audience Ops. I mentioned we have the 14 prepaid customers all signed up. So that basically gave me the go ahead to, okay, we're pushing this thing forward. I'm going to go ahead and hire a developer. So last week, I gave a test project to three different developers and they all came in pretty close. They were all really pretty good, but one just kind of inched out the other ones. And so I officially hired them. They are a three-person team in Montenegro. This week, they're just kind of putting together the basic architecture. And then next week on Monday, we literally start coding the first lines of code. So I'm excited to see that move forward. And it's, I'll be interested to see like what's the pace going to be like and how are the estimates going to kind of shake out in terms of like, this is how much we could actually accomplish in a 2 week span. But that's all moving ahead next week.
Yeah. Our situations are, you know, we're all like, okay, we need developers and then we're all doing it a little different, you know? So it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, you two are
in different stages.
Total opposite. Right. Cause right. Justin, you went from service to software and left the service behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, now we're a product, and we don't have a lead engineer, you know. So it's well, an interesting time period for sure.
You're sexy enough. Your company, of course, not you at all. Your company's sexy enough to attract the right person. So
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, our software is basically coming out of our service, the productized service, and the software is designed and built around what we've been doing manually. But we're going to continue doing both sides, you know, software and service for, you know, the foreseeable future.
But yeah, we've been talking about services internally ourselves. You can't help it sometimes when people just ask you, can you just do this for me?
There's a lot of value to be bought and sold there for sure.
Yeah.
So I mean, we went from service, the same thing, Brian, you know, like just build a product that allows you to do, you know, perform this service. And then we went basically cold turkey and just stop, you know, accepting signups on the done for you service. But what we're going to end up doing is we'll be raising prices with this new version of the product. And what we're going to be doing though is actually like getting a little more involved on, you know, helping them craft email sequences and whatnot. So, you know, we're going to kind of bring a little bit of a service element, you know, back into it that I think, you know, can also be a differentiator for us too.
I love that. I love that. We deal with it all the time. Whenever someone signs up for like, you know, $250-$500 a month, I'm like, this is the only type of client I want. This is it. Right. Just to be able to really get into the conversation with them and help them succeed is like, it's worth it, man. $3,000 a year for one customer. You don't need that many of those. You need a few hundred of those. You got a really nice business.
Yeah.
But you kind of can only do it if the price is right.
No,
cool. Spot on. Well, just to show you guys how much I care, I think I've gotten 40 mosquito bites during the course of this podcast. You keep seeing me like look around. Yeah,
I'm the guy that sits out back and just gets attacked by these things.
I know,
too.
Me too.
Oh, yeah. It's brutal.
Yep. I don't know. Hi, ladies. All right, good stuff, fellas. Justin, good to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Maybe we'll have you back on another. I think you're probably in the books for another time soon.
Yeah, I think so.
And we'll be back at it next week.
Cool. Havala.
Cheers.
Later.
Later.